The news from Lake Wobegon is brought to you by Fiber One Honey Cluster Cereal. With a touch of sweet honey and brown sugar, each serving has more than half of the daily value of fiber. Fiber One. Cardboard no, delicious yes.
Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown. Out on the edge of the prairie. It's been warm out there. It's been beautiful. The plum trees are in blossom, and the tulips and the crocuses are blooming, and the lilacs in bloom and lilac in the air. It's so magical. And then the other night, it was Tuesday night, that there was a full moon early in the morning, and many people woke up because it was so bright. You could see your shadow. It filled the town with a kind of a silvery light that you don't remember seeing, especially when you're half asleep. You wake up, and people got up, and some people stood out in their backyards. Here was this enormous silver moon hanging over the garage. They were suddenly wide awake at 2 o'clock in the morning, which goes against the natural order of things. You go to bed at 10, you wake up at 5, but here you are wide awake at 2 o'clock in the morning, and there's nobody to tell about this. Other sleepers are snoring upstairs, just you and you alone, and this feeling that something enormous is just about to happen. You're not sure what it is. Maybe John Keats felt this way. Maybe this is the feeling of a poet. Maybe this is what Beethoven felt like before he wrote his Eroica Symphony, this enormous private feeling of grandeur and the enormous sorrow, the immensity of life. Maybe the Holy Spirit is moving among you here, and who could you tell about this? You could call up California. They are 2 hours behind you. Maybe you could catch somebody at midnight, and if you got California and you said something enormous is happening, California would be sympathetic to that. New York might be skeptical, but New York, California could accept this. And then suddenly it dawns on you. It just comes to you in a rush at 2:30 in the morning, standing in your backyard, looking at the remains of the old clotheslines and like a musical scale across your backyard, and the lines and the moon and the meaning of this morning comes to you. It is live your life. Life is meant to be lived. This seems so profound to you at 2:30 in the morning. It does not seem that profound at 8 o'clock in the morning. And when you go down to the Chatterbox Cafe for breakfast at 8 o'clock in the morning and you see them sitting there at the counter, and Carl Krebsbach is there, and Myrtle and Florian and Clint Bunsen and Irene, you think about telling them what you discovered at 2:30 in the morning, that life is for living. The meaning of life is to live your life. And you decide against it. They're talking about financial things, and they're talking about summer, and they're talking about the crop forecast, and they're talking about their grandchildren, and it just somehow, the conversation doesn't seem to lead to that particular point. It's a romantic event, as was the prom, which was held last Saturday. It was held in the high school gymnasium where it's always been held, although the prom committee was thinking about holding it outdoors. Way back in January, they met, and the Krebsbach boy had a sort of a vision that they should do something different this year and have it in a meadow out in the woods, out in a meadow, and they could dance in their bare feet in the grass, and it would be a beautiful thing, and there'd be lights in the trees, and he had all sorts of ideas, plumed egrets and girls playing cello, 8, 9, 10 cellists and mimes with their faces painted white, and a jaguar on a leash, and all sorts of beautiful, beautiful things, and holding hands and dancing wildly in a circle, and dresses flowing and people's hair flowing as they went round and round and round in this great affirmation of life. It was a beautiful vision, and they told him to go ahead and do it. But oftentimes the person who has this vision of beauty is not the one you should send to look for the actual meadow. And the Krebsbach boy didn't go out and look for it. He told them he was all over it, but they interpreted that to mean that he had it covered, but he meant it to mean that he was done with it. And so they drifted on into February and into early April, and somehow the vision of the meadow disappeared, and then they panicked and realized they had to hold it someplace. And so they had to have it in the high school gymnasium, and they had to get out those old springtime in Paris decorations that go back to when I was in high school, if you can believe that. Those sets, we painted those sets, the blue sky. I worked on that blue sky and the Eiffel Tower and the Champs-Élysées and that nude statue that was painted over later for decency's sake. It was all brought out of storage once again, and it was the prom on Saturday. When, through God's grace, it was cold and rainy and windy, and so the meadow wouldn't have worked anyway. So the Krebsbach boy was off the hook on that one. They stood outside the school for their photograph last Saturday, and it was beautiful, brightly colored dresses, girls in shocking pink and yellow and turquoise and apricot, and beautiful dresses standing on a cold, windy day, the boys all in black, and the boys took off their jackets and put them over the girls' shoulders, and the girls nestled up against the boys and huddled, and the boys put their arms around the girls, and that's when the photograph was taken. It looked like they were already married. It looked like they'd been living together for years. And as the photograph was taken, a parade of cars drove slowly past, led by a hearse, and then six cars behind the hearse. It was the funeral of Mr. Stenerud, who had died on that Tuesday night. He was listening to Beethoven and eating popcorn, and his cat was in his lap. 94 years old, an old English teacher, and he just sank off and disappeared into the next world. Mr. Stenerud, who was a very strict English teacher and terrified generations of students at Lake Wobegon High School, and so none of them came to his funeral. But he taught them to beware of spelling mistakes, and he made them into copy readers for the rest of their lives. Good spelling, which makes a person look smarter than they actually are. He was a good man, and then he just disappeared from the world and was buried out of Lake Wobegon Lutheran Church, where the interim pastor, Barbara Hamm, preached the funeral sermon. She preached without a text, and we've had a lot of bad experience with that in the Lutheran Church. When a preacher steps down from the pulpit and steps down in the midst of the people and has no text in his or her hand, we think, uh-oh, because improvisation can lead people in strange directions they did not intend to go, and it goes on much longer than they ever thought it was going to, and that was the case with the funeral service for Mr. Stenerud. Oh, he went on and on and on. She was talking about the sheep and the sheep following the shepherd and obedience to the shepherd, and that included accepting suffering and suffering a natural part of life, and that led her somehow into talking about her colonoscopy, which she had just 2 weeks before, in which she went into way too much detail on this and talking about lying there in the hospital, and she was watching it all on a big screen TV and watching this journey through her lower colon, which reminded her of the Valley of Death. in Psalm 23, and how life oftentimes takes us into dark and bumpy places, but then eventually we come out the other end and into the sunshine. It was a metaphor with a lot of unfortunate associations. But finally, he was released, and Mr. Stenerud was taken up to the cemetery to move on his way. And eventually, I'm sure, as eternity rolls along, he will forget that sermon and go on to other things. The prom, this vision of youth and of lust in our midst in the spring, they all stood out there for photographs, the fathers of the young women taking video shots of their daughters, a little shocked to see their girls wearing such sexy clothes and that look of intense interest on the faces of their dates. Brought back my own memories of going with Marcia Ann Soderbergh to the prom. She and I were each other's last hope. I asked her because she was the only girl I knew who would not say no. And she accepted because she knew that I was the end of the road. But we leaned on each other and we breathed each other's air and we danced, which when you were brought up fundamentalist was really exciting. We were forbidden to dance for fear it would arouse carnal lust. And so that's the beauty of a restrictive upbringing, is it makes it all so much more exciting when you finally get around to it. I remember my hand on her bare shoulders as we moved to the waltz, more or less, and we talked to each other. My mouth was right next to her beautiful left ear. She said, "What are you going to do after you graduate?" I said, "I'm going to go to the university." She said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I want to be a writer and write novels." I said, "What are you going to do?" She said, "I'm going to move to California." Oh, we stood there in each other's arms. And then I did the gentlemanly thing, and I took her outside to the grass, and we sat on the grass, and I knew it was wrong. But sometimes a gentleman has to do the wrong thing. She was weeping on my shoulder. She was so grateful I had taken her to the prom. I kissed her several times, and I kissed her shoulders, and I touched her collarbones and admired the beautiful structure of it, and her sternum and her shoulder blades. She was so, so lovely. I put my hand on her bare back and I whispered into her ear, just as I'm whispering to you right now. I told her that I loved her, that I would remember her forever. And now I finally have, after all those years. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, the men are good looking, and all the children are above average.